Hey everyone, welcome to our weekly edition of the Out of the Woods Threat Hunting Podcast. This is Scott Poley here with Tom Kostura.
Hello, everybody.
And this weekly segment features the top stories that threat hunters need to be thinking about, as well as our thoughts on the subject and some hunting strategies. So with that, let's dive into the top threat hunting headlines for the week of November 5th, 2024. So Tom, why don't you start us off? What do you got?
All right. So first thing I have for today is an article out, from Unit 42, titled Jumpy Pisces Engages in Play Ransomware. So Jumpy Pisces, also known as Andario or Onyx Sleet, it's a North Korean nation state APT, traditionally known for its efforts in cyber espionage. And they have been identified shifting their tool sets to leverage Play Ransomware, which is interesting in a couple layers. In the report observation, Jumpy Pisces leveraged Sliver, an open source red team tool, to establish persistence, move laterally, and establish C2, as well as their custom malware D-Track to steal data. And basically what it does is steals the data and compresses it into a GIF file. That's what's typically seen and used for, they've done so for exfiltration. In the observation of this attack, the threat actor used a single compromised account along each step of the attack chain, which allowed for abuse of things like Windows access tokens, lateral movement, escalation to system privileges, which in turn ultimately allowed them to mass uninstall EDR sensors to then deploy the Play Ransomware. So it's unclear how Jumpy Pisces and Play Ransomware became affiliated. There is some thought that the Jumpy Pisces group simply is acting as an IAB or initial access broker. But either way, it does kind of speak to the concern that the North Korean APT like this could be increasingly part of larger ransomware campaigns. So something to definitely, you know, strike a note to keep on the watch for. So, you know, Scott, a point of conversation I wanted to toss to you from this is, you know, both of these groups have reports on them, you know, out in the open source arena, right? Mm-hmm. It kind of had me thinking about, like, how a team would hunt or detect each of them. Typically, and if like maybe a small shift in thinking might be considered. So, you know, in a lot of cases, I would think that the thought of kind of overlapping the two would only start at a point of an intelligence article, something like this that says, hey, this is the activity we're seeing. But what point do you think would a strong consideration from like an operation standpoint, if you're building detections, if you're hunting, things like that, would you start looking at, how do I look for overlap between things? Maybe as a way to be proactive to looking at this, or maybe I can look at putting together my hunt hypothesis with a little more depth in certain ways. I'm speaking very high level, and I was going to work down in the weeds a little bit. You know, and then from there, is there a thought, you know, to doing so before something is reported, you know, again, to be proactive? So, you know, what are your thoughts on this one?
So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because if you look at this, the attack lifecycle of this alone, you know, they said they were identifying activity back like May 28th. And, you know, then it led to basically when the ransomware group kind of either took over or was being leveraged, they went all the way to like September 5th, right, to the pre-ransomware activity. And that's a kind of a long window when you actually were, if you were to consider this purely just a ransomware campaign. So I think some of your assumptions play out well, where, you know, obviously there's already use of compromised account. So that means there is some interaction with some access to data or some other, you know, entity, right? So then now they have that access. And then there's just a lot of more like persistence based approaches and not so much like moving like payloads, tool sets, and things, which also kind of shows more of, like you said, like it's like a persistence perspective before then it kind of switches over to Play Ransomware, and then all of a sudden, like, you see the standard activities you see associated with the pre-steps to what, you know, ransomware groups typically do, so their stuff can be successful. And so when it talks about, like, you know, looking for overlapping things, I think it's not as important to say like what is the single best thing to hunt for from a what does it cover. It's more about what can you detect with detections or visibility alone, because you and I, you know, you could probably speak to this as well. As long as you can find that one thing, right, that kind of triggers you, there's something odd going on. the rest of the picture is a lot easier to build. Like, you kind of know where to look, you know where to pivot, you know all these types of things. So like just the few things that, you know, just kind of stand out in general. The pre-ransom activities where they're using task manager to dump LSAS. I mean, that's just a common technique that should be easy to identify. And then PS exec in general, right? That's also an interesting piece because some environments don't use PS exec that much. And if it is being used, it's only being used by key individuals likely. And it's easy to see the use of it, even if they try to do all this trickery, because of the EULA that they have to agree to and the registry edits to happen because of all these things. If it's the first time use, if it's an environment that doesn't use it a lot. So you have those aspects. And then also they're doing extraction from the SAM registry hive. And so that means there's interactions with dumping that either using regs or other mechanisms. So there are some key things that a lot of adversaries kind of use in that realm. That if you're just paying attention to those, you could build the same picture. Like that, I think what's misleading to a lot of people that don't have as much time dealing with incidents and breaches, because, you know, sometimes you might work somewhere for years before you witness a breach. And when you see these reports where you see the timelines and everything stitched together, it makes it sound like that was just all discovered at once, right? And the funny thing is you know it wasn't discovered all at once because the story wouldn't be as long. Because if it was discovered, more than likely people would have stopped it before it went all the way through that whole life cycle. And so what this is really telling you is, hey, it was discovered, and it was discovered much later in the game because they were able to put this whole story together. And that's what I mean by just finding that one thing really helps. The other thing that I thought was really interesting, and this is something that, you know, we've talked about, if it wasn't last week or the week before, but probably within the last month, right? Just casually, because we saw something related to this, but they were dropping a lot of their payloads in the user's public music directory, right? And we've had conversations where it's like, you know, there are just some directories where if there's file types alone in these directories that aren't related to the purpose of the directory, it can be very suspicious. Yeah. Right. And it's such an easy thing, and it's easy to understand concept that, you know, at the end of the day, even from an investigation standpoint, it could be quick and easy. So there's just simple things that when you just kind of just think through the problem and not try to solve it all as one grand, large piece, and you break it up in some smaller pieces and just focus on what you do really well, I think you'd still be just as successful with attacks like these. As long as, you know, you can have high fidelity and confidence in what you're looking at, and you have the skills to kind of pivot off data, and you have the right visibility, I think that's, you know, at the end of the day, you'd be fine.
Yeah, no, I think so too. You know, I think it's more of a, you know, kind of tossing it out in the wild. You know, we've seen coming up their operations where, let's say there's something that's very well documented, right? Let's just classify a play ransomware here. It can spin off for a couple of years. You know, there's a lot known about it. Let's just say that's what you tracked, right? And maybe you didn't have anything that looked at said APT group. So you treated it as, you know, you've had this established protocol for, you know, if you found it when you were hunting, if you found it via detection, or if you were hit by it, you know, if you were devastated by an actual execution of it. You know, is there ever thought to look at how this was brought into that level? You know, I don't know. It's a very long back thought, but it's like starting to stitch together this idea of maybe it's worth considering other things, because you can get caught in, like, especially on an operations standpoint, right? You can get caught very tunnel visioned on this one thing, like, oh, let's play ransomware. We have a protocol. We have a playbook for this, right? Yeah. But what about the other thing? When do you consider that? Are you going back and looking at that? Is there any overlap or cross thought between, okay, A to B, or, you know, all of the things that you went through? Or are you like, okay, we stopped it, we were successful, and then you start moving on? You get what I'm saying? I don't know if I'm putting that together the right way.
No, like how I interpret what you're saying and what I see commonly too is, you know, sometimes security operations isn't about answering all those questions. It's about resolving the issue, right? And like, to your point, if you're so focused on the things you can see and it's maybe associated to the steps that happen later in the attack chain, like, I always used to hate when it'd be like, oh, we caught this, say it's something associated with phishing, this like malicious document that did whatever. And I'm like, okay, well, like, where did it come from? Okay, what was it trying to drop? Like, what was, if it was successful, what would have happened? And like, as you start investigating, and then like, where was it sent from? Like, you start looking at all those leads in detail. Sometimes you also uncover some other things that you're like, well, this one wasn't successful, but now we know enough about the attack or the intentions of the attack that if there are future attacks, we know more about it and we're better prepared and maybe even have better defenses associated with those things. It isn't just about, hey, we have a hash now for this, we can block this one, right? Like,
Right.
so I think that's like the takeaway there is just because you did find something, like if you have the resources, investigate, right? Like if you have the
Yeah.
time, understand things. Like that's how you get better at this, and that's how you continue to mature. Like I've always said, like it's really important to always increase maturity in whatever you're doing and whatever operations is, and also building things towards a better strategy. So,
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thought. I think leaving at the end of this one is maybe that's good food for an operations, perspective to toss to someone like a threat hunt team. Maybe it's like, okay, we've seen this, we cut the head off the snake, we stopped, we mitigated, we did the thing, but here are all these unanswered questions, and that would be great food for a hunt team to go dig, right? And go look to see and just
or
wondering
even
there. But
like threat intel, depending on like what you're trying to answer,
yeah,
right?
oh yeah, exactly.
Like it,
Like a good
that's
way
where
to
I feel like
put them
these
all
teams
together.
should really work together, right? There's like something
100%,
as simple
right.
as that. I think that's how it should be, like linear is where things are being shared. There should be have one team dictate priorities for the other. It should really just be a cohesion, right? As far as, hey, we all have a role and we all really feed and get excited and we have strengths in these different areas. Like, let's just see what we turn out. Like, there's no guarantee, but like, it's still beneficial. So, yeah.
All right, what do you got for Scott?
All right. So, the one I was going to jump into was something from Cyber Express. And it was called Hepta X, Uncovering the Cyber Espionage Operations Through Unauthorized RDP Connections. So, basically, it was an attack that there was a Hepta X campaign where they used malicious shortcut files or LNK files and scripts basically to exploit kind of remote desktop access, targeting healthcare and stealing passwords. So they're using these capabilities to kind of set up and allow remote desktop access and other things. But the big thing here is, what's interesting is you see kind of the same pattern as you see from other attacks. So this is why I feel like what we were just talking about, plays a great role in that. Like, we see an attack chain that we have seen for years, right? And this is still successful. And I feel like if people are at least keeping up to date with what's currently going on by like actively looking for, reports and things to understand the kind of current lay of the land, and also maybe when they do identify things, walking them back to build the same picture, because it really is a phishing email sending a zip file, right? And the zip file is probably password protected, and it's got a shortcut file in there, which is a common approach to how you can get a shortcut file in. And then the shortcut file launches PowerShell, which is a little hard to identify like that association necessarily, but that PowerShell initial script or execution from the shortcut file, main purpose is really just to download more payloads. So it's using, the typical behaviors that PowerShell uses to download files, and it's connecting directly to an IP address. It's not connecting to a domain. So already there's some like big red flags of things we talk about that you should have visibility to and awareness when that kind of behavior is going on in your environment. And then, of course, if it's downloading things, it's also pulling down PowerShell scripts and bat scripts. So it's kicking off other things in that process chain. So when you have PowerShell sometimes kicking off PowerShell, sometimes it's like that may be normal in some instances, but I don't think it should be overly popular, right? And then for persistence, they're putting the LNK in a startup folder, just like some basic things, right? You should be aware of certain file types when they're being created and also where they're being placed. It's a huge red flag in a lot of instances. So, that was really, they kind of broke down a little bit of technical analysis, but they really just kind of walked into some of the overarching behaviors, like, they had initial compromise, PowerShell execution, UAC manipulation, stuff like that. But like I just walk through, I walk through enough of the attack that everyone should almost identify those steps consistently and make the judgment of, is this malicious or not? And then paint that picture versus, you know, people still getting hit by these same things. Which, you know, I really hope people kind of look at the problem differently so these things don't continue to happen. I mean, I personally kind of like to happen this way because I feel like then it makes me sound like I know what I'm doing and I have the answers. Because, like, oh, yeah, look, they're doing something I've seen 100 times. I'm an expert now because I know this. But, you know, that's not really where I want to be if I'm really trying to solve problems, right? So, you know, it'd be interesting if we could just kind of step up our game as far as our understanding and how we handle these issues.
Yeah, I don't think you need to issue that challenge to the attackers, you know. And also, I really do feel like you missed an opportunity to say single character file extensions.
Really?
Yeah, you didn't drop that in there. I thought that was a good timing. It's not in there. I just thought it was a good play.
The comic press. Yeah.
Very much.
Got me excited for a second.
Yeah, it's a lot of the same stuff, right? A lot of the basics. It's you know, I don't know how to add to that piece. I do agree with it. I found something was interesting in this article to me. And, you know, I think it's maybe diving a little deeper than the article's meaning to. But it talked about the creation of an account named Boot UEFI. Mm-hmm. That stood out to me as something a little different. I don't think, or at least I can't recall that I've seen that leverage, like that reference, but I also didn't see anything in any of the technical pieces where I talked about them actually trying to exploit the UEFI bootkit, right?
I feel
so
like
I was
it's
curious
just like
what that was about. That's like a red flag to me. I'm like, wait. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it's like, oh, well, that sounds legitimate because we know that's a thing, right? And if you don't really know how everything works, maybe you'd be like, well, I mean, yeah, it's the boot EFI, you know. But what I always find interesting too is, you know, back in like early days of my security, like the common thing, like, well, when there's a breach, they're going to create accounts for persistence, right? And that was like a big thing. You don't really see account creation as much anymore, but the fact that it still goes on, I think, is also interesting. And there's one other thing that I would say is, and it's interesting, and I don't know if it's just a coincidence, but I've seen a lot more from a wide array of attackers. Where they're creating custom like RDP type settings to connect and set up RDP and things like that. And, you know, I always wonder, like, okay, if this is becoming popular in attacks, does that mean that people are on the underground are just talking about it enough to where it's like, oh, you know, these are some things that, you know, seem to work for some people. Maybe we should try these things or whatever. And so like it becomes like a common thread. Because I've just seen a lot of it. Like RDP seems like the go-to thing, and it's always about setting up certain privileges so that you can take advantage of credentials and stuff like that, which seems to be kind of more popular now. So that's something else that's interesting as far as maybe since it's more prevalent, looking at how or where RDP connections are going in your network or out of your network might be a good thing to be aware of, right?
Yeah, 100%.
What do you got next?
All right. So the next thing I got, I thought this was an interesting article. It's out of Google Project Zero. So it talks about Google reporting that their AI tool, Big Sleep, discovered a zero-day vulnerability in an SQLite database and the database engine. This is important because it's kind of the first reported AI vulnerability discovery tool. Successful tool. And I thought there was a lot of cool talking points about this. You know, Big Sleep is formally referred to as Nap Time. Some people may have heard it as that in the past, but basically it looks to leverage AI to simulate human behavior and identify and demonstrate security vulnerabilities by taking advantage of large language models and the code comprehension and reasoning abilities designed within them. So recently Big Sleep reported they found a zero-day stack buffer underflow in SQLite. Buffer underflow, for those that are not aware, I wasn't off the top. I had to refresh on this one. You don't hear it that often. You should hear overflow. It's basically when the memory is accessed before the beginning of the buffer versus at the end, like an overflow is. So I bring this article up because, you know, I just thought it was a great launch pad for some more talk on AI. It had me thinking about the positive that could come from this, Scott. You know, first thought was having a tool set like this to deliver potential vulnerabilities, like in a given thing or app or something, bringing it to the forefront for human review is kind of huge. Considering the technical depth and more so the time to identify things, like an AI tool set getting there faster could have very strong impacts for security as a whole. One of the first examples I thought about top of mind was being able to put that capability alongside like R&D. So a given vendor or a company, you know, you generally see some of the stuff for the security review and their code tend to get left. We've talked about it on this podcast a few times already, right? And having a tool like this that could help streamline that process to not slow down that speed to market effort that tends to, at least in my viewpoint, get in the way of doing good security sometimes. This could really have an impact there, you know, and it just kind of seems like, you know, a win-win for putting out, you know, more effective and more secure things. You know, I had a few more thoughts on this, but I'm going to pause and, you know, see what you thought about this article.
Now, this is one of the applications where I thought like large language models and some of that would be great solutions for. And for a number of reasons, like one, you can get those models to understand like logical progression, right? Like, you know, if it knows how to construct sentences and thoughts and stitch things together, like there is like that logic component. And it, but it's that means it's also able to understand patterns as well. And when you think about code in general, really it's just like a stream of logic, and there are patterns in that stream of logic that can lead to more vulnerable or more secure associations. And so I think it'd be really easy for these models to pick up on those vulnerabilities much easier. Now, what I think is great about something like this is you think about what is it, the Log4j stuff? As a prime example, right? It is an open source library that's embedded in so many things that has vulnerabilities that you would never really know, and you didn't even know if you had it, right? And supply chain and software management, like all that stuff's really hard to manage. Like, well, if we're trusting third party, if it's open source, how do we trust that? How great would it be to be able, if I mean, if anything, to license a tool to say, here's all the open source libraries we use because we inventoried them all, and we can actually put visibility with the light the you know, what's pushed and published from the source code perspective because it's publicly available to identify potential risks, right? And possibly help communities resolve those risks. Like, that's a great use case. And then, obviously, if a company doesn't want to make their code open sourced, then they can license something like this as, I mean, I know there are tools out there that already kind of scrub code, but it's looking for like almost like hard coded patterns. And sometimes, understanding bigger picture things is where a model like this might be better, as far as how far away from the code is from itself, and as far as how does it run and where is it, you know, the path is actually traveling based on the logic. So I think there's just a huge strength there, and I'm glad that they're doing this already from a let's test this out from a defensive standpoint, because if we don't do it defensively, you know for a fact at some point offensive people will do it just based on curiosity, and
100%.
There'll be varying levels of success. And I'm not saying this is like a silver bullet to things, but one of the biggest hurdles we seem to have is bringing things to market too fast before they're really ready. I mean, I know you play games and I play games, and that's like one of the things that, I mean, even look at that market. It's not about putting out a polished game that you buy on media now. They can update things so fast, they'd rather push something out to hit deadlines and fix it later. And I feel like when the risk isn't big, because maybe whatever your product is isn't going to be, you know, a loss monetarily if something happens to it, sure. But when you have these like, you know, solutions that can drastically impact businesses and companies, having as many kind of tools available to speed up the process for validation of code and things like that, so that you can still be kind of first to market for a lot of things. That's kind of where we need to start going with things. And you know, from a certification, from a compliance standpoint, I mean, this would be great, because how do you, from a compliance standpoint, say, well, how do you trust this code? What are you doing to trust this code if you're using the open source? People spend so much money because they're required to, but if they have something that's validated, say, well, we tested it through this series of tests, not just one, but a series of tests to say, yeah, the version we're running, we can say we feel confident that it is okay. and we monitor for anything that gets published as far as vulnerabilities go. And if everybody's doing this a little differently, but they're all doing it at the same time, there's granted, like collectively, I feel like this would be a really good solution as well.
And it's just, you know, ultimately, you tend a lot of questions come around AI where it's, you know, it's a buzzword, but a lot of things that are buzzwords at certain points, they really have some underpinnings of true potential, right? I mean, for how long? Man, I'm gonna argue back to a decade ago. You know, the idea of threat hunting was a buzzword, right? But you know, we actively are working hard every day to show, oh, here's the real thing, real value, right? The AI tooling and the leveraging of it. It doesn't have to be a buzzword sometimes, and I think this is a good evidence of potential. And this one I thought was just so cool, because the potential that it could bring. And you know, we mentioned a bunch of the facts, but yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out of this. I'm going to keep my eyes on this big sleep one for sure.
Yeah, and I didn't see, like, this is something they made open source. This is an internal project, right?
Yeah, this is an internal project from my
Yeah.
understanding.
Yeah, it's a good one. So yeah, I've got another one that's kind of a thought topic, and it's more just like it's an interesting story. And I kind of wish vendors did more of these types of things and had some sort of approach, and maybe they do, because I've never been a vendor like this one that we're about to talk about, but maybe they do actively do things like this. But basically, it's something on, you know, a typical HelpNet security article. They're highlighting about the Sophos-mounted counteroffensive operations to foil Chinese attackers. So basically, it just kind of walks through what Sophos has reported about espionage campaigns that they've identified that are tied back to Chinese hacking groups. And not just one, you know, a few of them, and where they're actively trying to take advantage of Sophos devices that typically can live on the edge of certain networks because there is some exposure. And, you know, it was something that they were two major campaigns they talk about. They started releasing details back in 2020, but there was the Cloud Snooper and Asnarok. And what was interesting is they raised the awareness when they started identifying these campaigns, that they basically were able to say, yeah, these are Chinese agency adversaries, and they're really hyper-focused on compromising perimeters of unpatched end-of-life devices, you know, even using zero-day exploits for these types of things. So based on this information and what they were seeing, they created a threat actor tracking program really focused on identifying and disrupting adversaries looking to exploit their stuff, and based on what was deployed in customer environments. And so the program was really using a combination of open source intelligence, some web analytics and telemetry monitoring that they get, and then targeted kernel implants, which I thought was interesting. So those are deployed to attackers' research devices. So it's almost like they were able to identify what devices were likely the attackers that they were using to then start to understand attacks before they happen based on their testing, which I thought was crazy. I think it's, you know, I mean, I would say, like, I don't know the approval process or what a process they go through to do all that, but kind of a cool technique. And it's one of those things where they're literally also noticing that they're just attacking anything because they're looking for even operational relay boxes, or they call them orbs. So even if their intended target wasn't the one they're able to hit directly, if there was a target that just existed on the internet that was reachable, they can actually attack. They would leverage those to proxy attack. So you kind of become collateral damage through a lot of the things that are happening, which is also interesting. But they were able to basically see exploits and zero days being utilized before they're utilized in the wild, and then start putting things to block, fix, or adjust before they actually were hit. So it's kind of a really cool approach. And I was thinking, you know, I really feel like there's a if companies that have especially edge-based technologies, technology that's supposed to live at the edge of networks, they should have a like device almost on especially key networks where it's almost like they're a honeypot, right? Like you know that what targets would be desirable to be hit. And if you, and even if, and it could even be even better, if there's a target you know is desirable to be hit and they don't use your technology, but you can convince them to say, hey, we think you're a prime target for us to at least put something on the edge that doesn't even interact with your network, but we just might steal an IP address essentially or have a route to it. Like, that might be beneficial, but I feel like these companies, like, that should kind of be part of the, if you're going to be in this market for, you know, providing these types of services at these points in a network, maybe you need to have, hey, yeah, we're collecting this type of information to stay live and, you know, up to date with what's going on. I don't know. I feel like it's just an interesting approach that I don't hear about from a lot of industry, like, you know, some sort of seal to say they do this. It would be really cool, like accreditation or something. But I think it's a really cool and good approach to protect the product and protect your customers. So
I do as well. I like this. This idea was super cool, right? Like, the things they were able to accomplish, like the one that's, and funny enough, the one that stood out to me was like they were able to like obtain like several preempted attacks where they were like able to gain a copy of a UEFI bootkit that they were trying to do or custom exploits, and then they could spin that back in and develop protections, gain telemetry, enhance threat intelligence, all these really cool things, right? It is really cool, but I want to offer a bit of a devil's advocate approach to something like this. So I'm just kind of curious your thoughts. This is kind of exciting to look at from this perspective, but when you look to apply it to, you know, because they mentioned in this article, they talk about, you know, like Vault Typhoon, right? Like, widely known, and they look to take advantage of a lot of the small, you know, the SOHO type stuff, the edge type stuff. Sophos, I'm not entirely sure of their size, but, you know, I'm going to speculate based on my general knowledge of, I know that name, it's pretty strong. They're a decent sized company, right? So that maybe they have the ability to do this, right? A lot of the companies that do some of these other tools or do some of these other things with devices and tools and such that are being taken advantage of, maybe they don't. So I guess from a devil's advocate kind of argument, I worry that maybe this sets a precedent for, you know, because I could see how it could be like, especially if we consider like CISA's push to really kind of encourage these companies to build, right? And to take security first in the thought process.
Right.
And you apply something like this where you see the success story, not everybody's going to be able to replicate this. And thought process is, what does that potentially do for technology that comes forward? I could even see this bleeding over into some security technologies, even though security technologies are generally meant to help you do that. They're not all encompassing, right? They could be, and there's potential for things to be exploited, even like, you know, just firewalls that are exploited all the time, right?
Yeah.
You might not, you know, what could this inhibit? Could this level of success inhibit other companies to develop that technology? You know, this is where you get in that gray line. So I know I'm talking back a little bit, but you have this speed to market thought process. Mm-hmm. You have this idea of get good technologies out there. Could a precedent be set when you start seeing things like this where bigger companies are able to do that? Are they going to squash out the little guys who can't, you know, do organizations or do policies or do, you know, requirements come out from somebody like a CISO or however it's laid out, you know, insurance companies, et cetera. When they see this, they say, okay, now you have to meet this precedent, and this is squash out, you know, technology development. Doesn't squash out little guys getting into the market. Doesn't squash out the ability to do any of that. It's a bit of a devil's advocate thought, but I had that pretty strongly when I read this, because I think it's really cool, but what's the other side of the coin look like?
Yeah. So I think for one, you know, there's incentives that can definitely be driven, because even like almost every company now is really stepping up with like cyber insurance. And I would assume that same process applies to security-based companies as well. And if there's maybe there could be monetary incentives where if you have a program like this, that insurance premium can be less, right? Because you're doing more than your due diligence in some aspects. But two, the other thing is I look at it that it really comes back to some process. Like if you have this as part of your strategy or what you want to do, then you really are, as part of your development life cycles, making sure that into your product, you're developing additional capabilities to collect telemetry from kind of a dead device, like a device that, you know, almost is like a honeypot. It's like got everything on it, but you can turn on extra visibility. That, to be completely frank, I mean, there's no reason why a customer couldn't turn it on, except for maybe the device can't run full tilt by providing services and doing these types of behaviors. But then it, then so there's some development time to possibly add some capabilities to do this. And then how much does your device actually cost, right? From bare metal, or even, you know, you might even have where it's a software driven thing, right? Where you can drop into certain places that way. Like, what does that cost? Because if it doesn't cost much, then it makes sense to almost kind of distribute things out there where you kind of have that telemetry or sensory or things like that happening. I mean, like, look at just if it's a software based thing, dropping things in the clouds, right? I mean, that could be kind of a normal approach. They could potentially make it more capable. But yeah, I think really what it comes down to, and like we were talking about before, like maturity and strategy, it just seems like this is a model that fits into trying to make their products more mature and building out a strategy to make them more effective. And I'm not saying that everyone needs to mirror this specific thing, but man, they really should have strides to do those two things on whatever that means for their space, their business, or whatever. And this is just a good example of that, of, you know, if that is your priority, look what you can accomplish with that. I think these are some big wins for them, just telling this narrative. And, you know, it's not, you can't say it's easy, because the campaign, it's 2024. They released details in 2020 and they were seeing things in 2018. I mean, we're talking about a story that's kind of breaking 6 years afterwards, right?
Yeah.
That's a long time for security, you know, people to put together a plan to stop a specific problem.
I don't think their success can be understated. So, you know, my devil's advocate argument was not to do that. I think this is super cool.
Oh, yeah,
it really is. It really kind of sets a precedent and a baseline of what can be accomplished if you apply that methodology to it, right?
Right. Like if someone says like, oh, we didn't know, you know, we're being like, this is being attacked or leveraged or tested. It's like, you know, the question kind of comes to why not? You might have a good answer, but like, I don't know. Like I've thought about building security devices and I'm always paranoid enough to think like, oh gosh, if I were to put something out there, how would I know that it's not being the target, you know, in the instance if I were to put something, you know what I mean? Like I'm okay if things happen around me, I guess, but if I'm the target, then I feel kind of responsible.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, you know, the other part too, which is really cool to see, is that like Sophos is taking the, you know, taking the initiative to say, we're going to make our products better. And, you know, I think we've seen and we've experienced where a lot of times, you know, a vendor may not even consider that because they're just not willing to put it as part of their business model. So it's kind of like an acceptable risk. Maybe there's a better term for it that I'm just not savvy on, but you know, it's like, it's on you, you know, here's our device, here's what it does, but it's up to you to secure it. Sometimes it's up to you to figure out how to secure it. Right. And here they're like, okay, wait, let's try to do
something. If they provide those capabilities for you to secure what it is that you need to secure, sure. But when we talk about like zero day exploits, like there's nothing you can physically do unless you're putting another device in front of that said device. Like we always made the joke back in the day. It was like, yeah, we're pretty impenetrable because, you know, we have four or five different firewall brands all stacked in front of each other. So you have to be able to exploit so many of them to get all the way through. It's like, I mean, yeah, it's crazy to think, but like, that's not the kind of security stack you A, want to manage, and B, does it really make sense? Like, that's not what you want to build.
Right.
But I mean, that is a solution, I guess. Right. So, yeah.
Oh, very cool article.
Yeah. So good. Like I said, good food for thought. So one more thing I really want to mention before we close out here, we do have another threat hunting workshop focusing on discovery, you know, that MITRE vertical. That'll be happening November 20th, and that's going to be 12 to 1 p.m. And that's going to be with Lee Arcanal and Jorge Rodriguez. They've done the past few of them and got a lot of good feedback. So I expect this one to be just as good. So definitely check that out. And if you can't check it out necessarily live because it doesn't work out for you, definitely sign up so it's easier to find the resources to check it out later. I think that's one of the best things, is all the resources are available. They just it might be harder to find if you don't sign up initially. So with that, I really want to thank everyone for joining our Out of the Woods Threat Hunting podcast. Looking forward to syncing back up next week. So with that, we'll close out the top threat hunting headlines for the week of November 5th, 2024. Happy hunting.
Happy hunting, everyone.